Hey, you want that to go?
Now for some takeouts on stories you're following this week. Well, unless you're a baseball fan, you may not have been aware of the name Jim Bunning before this week, but a lot of people now know who the Kentucky Republican senator is. That's because Jim Bunning was the lone man to filibuster jobless benefits, payments for doctors, highway construction, small business loans, and a whole host of other programs.
The question is whether or not we as a Senate and we as a government are going to pay for what we spend.
But the senator relented last night. Joining us now is Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
So Jim Bunning changed his mind. Too much pressure?
Well, it became clear after a couple of days of this that while Republicans do like the idea of challenging Democrats to pay for things for this $10 billion, having that challenge now in a hurting economy when people are hurting, losing their unemployment benefits, COBRA health benefits, maybe not being able to go to work on a highway project that they got a job on, just probably wasn't good politics. It was unclear when Jim Bunning would relent, but he finally did. They had a vote and the extension passed last night.
It couldn't have helped when they had people all over the news saying, I'm unemployed and I just lost my benefits because of Jim Bunning.
It couldn't have helped, and it didn't help.
That's right. So we're getting a lot of movement from the White House on health care today, and we're hearing that the president actually wrote a letter to congressional leaders yesterday. He said that after the summit, he's decided to make four specific concessions to the Republicans on health care. What are these four concessions he's talking about?
That's right, but I'm going to back you off of that just a little bit, Celeste. That word concessions makes it seem like the president is going a long way to compromise, and this letter doesn't really reflect that. Now, it is an outreach to Republicans. The president's going to make a speech today outlining these 4 points. The president says he's willing to go further on curbing waste and fraud in the health care system, and Republicans will like that a little bit, but that's already in the bill. The president says he's willing to have some more experimentation in the states to curb lawsuits against doctors. That might be a bit of a concession, but there was already some nods in the bill towards experimenting with malpractice lawsuits. There was boosting Medicaid. Medicaid is the health care program for the poor. There's boosting Medicaid payments for doctors. President's willing to do that. And including health savings accounts. This is a concession. Health savings accounts are tax-free accounts. Republicans love them because they lower taxes. It's in a way sort of a voucher system for health care in a way. Democrats are not fond of this program, but the president said he's willing to include it. That's a concession. So then you wonder, are Republicans impressed with this outreach from the president? Listen to Republican leader Mitch McConnell yesterday after he read the letter.
The suggestion that we might have a few items inadequately addressed in a 2,700-page bill.
Not too impressed.
Not too impressed. So Nancy, we also heard Nancy Pelosi saying she wished the president well with this. Does that mean that Democrats are skeptical of the president's attempt to reach across the aisle?
Absolutely. We wish the president well getting bipartisanship, but Democrats feel they've had none so far. So then the plan is reconciliation, as we've talked about, which is not a bipartisan approach at all.
Lastly, let's talk about New York Congressman Charlie Rangel. He is currently the chairman for the Ways and Means Committee, but he's being charged with ethics violations, and the Democrats were hoping he would step down from his chairmanship, but he's refused to do so.
And we'll see if by the end of the day or the end of the week, Charlie Rangel is still chairman. He went into a meeting with Nancy Pelosi last night, and rumors were swirling around the Hill that Charlie Rangel was done as chairman. But when he came out of that meeting, he said, "You bet your life I'm still chairman." Republicans are going to force a vote on this, and we'll see how many Democrats want to stand by Rangel to keep him in control of one of the most powerful committees in Congress going into an election where a lot of them are going to be vulnerable. So by the end of the week, we'll see if Mr. Rangel is still in charge.
Thanks, Todd. Todd Zwillick is the Takeaways Washington correspondent.
We're going to finish out this takeout segment by the numbers. We explored yesterday trying to make sense of big and small numbers in our world, from the 60-vote majority needed in Congress to that 8.8 Chilean earthquake magnitude, the recent mark of 1,000 American soldiers dying in Operation Enduring Freedom.
We as humans, every single day, we hear about Congress passing, you know, trillion-dollar budgets. We hear all these numbers every single day, so numbers don't mean a whole lot until you actually can associate a body with that number.
Perhaps you remember the voice of Pat Merrick, mother of one of those 1,000 fallen soldiers in Afghanistan. You can listen back to that interview at our website, thetakeaway.org. But we've heard from you. How do you put numbers in context?
I'm calling from Boca Raton, Florida. My name is Sam. With the superlatives that are used by the media, I think without using numbers, you have no real comprehension as to what the disaster or what the conditions might be. On the other hand, I don't believe that the human mind is capable of just dealing with a number. For example, in the Holocaust, whether you're dealing with 1,000 deaths or 100,000 deaths or 1,000,000 deaths, the numbers become incomprehensible.
But Patricia in New York emails that she doesn't like particularly how, quote, the media uses numbers in headlines that say at least this many killed. I understand, she says, that this is a shorthand to express the as-yet uncounted fatalities, but implied in the use of the words at least, there seems to me there's a hope that the number will be larger. Whatever happened to the more sober and more respectful known dead?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Evelyn writes us, I've lived near the Washington coast for over 25 years, and the numbers I've never gotten used to are earthquake levels. How close we are to the big one. Right up there on my list is the attendant tsunami potential, possible wave heights, how far inland it could come, etc. I don't at all have a feeling the West Coast states are prepared for either of these kinds of disasters, let alone the small, economically challenged communities in which I've lived. Local news reports following disasters like Haiti and Chile confirm that opinion.
And we're going to leave you with comments from David in Nashua, New Hampshire, who writes us a quote from Alexis de Tocqueville. He says, when statistics are not based upon computations that are strictly accurate, they mislead instead of guiding aright. The mind is easily imposed upon by the affectation of exactitude, which marks even the misstatement of statistics. And it adopts with confidence the errors which are apparelled in the forms of mathematical truth.
Your affectations of exactitude are all welcome here on the program. Keep in mind this number, 8778-MY-TAKE, and you can reach us at our website, thetakeaway.org.